This is Voices from Appalachia Radio Show, sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University. I'm Brian Staggers, and here's your host, Bianca Eisen.
Appalachians are typically depicted as white, straight, and from low-income communities. But this narrative overlooks the young, the queer, and the other ethnicities that all call Appalachia home. And while many young people are encouraged to leave the region, especially if they identify with the LGBTQIA community, many want to stay and work towards improving the inclusivity of the region. Today, we'll be getting to know Andrew Price, a Shepherd alumnus who works as Associate Director of Residence Life for Shepherd University. Price is a native to West Virginia who also identifies with the queer community. The interview was conducted by Amar Granulo, a Shepherd alumnus who received his master's in college student development and administration in 2021.
My name is Amar Granulo. Thank you so much for, being part of this conversation that we're going to have today.
Yeah, thanks for asking me to be on and kind of talk a little bit about Appalachia and my identity and things like that.
We'll start off first, I think, with one question that can be really interesting, but at the same time, really specific towards you since you come from Appalachia. It can mean, different things, and, it can mean specific kind of things that are bonded with the people that come from Appalachia. So what do you think of when you think of Appalachia?
So the first of me, a couple of things that come to mind, funny enough, are food, like food related things. But I think it's important to know, like for a really long time in my life, I didn't really think of Appalachia. Like it was just kind of always my surroundings and always my context. And only as I started going to college and kind of exploring the world a little bit outside of the region, did that start to become important to me. And so it started to become more than just like, the food and the people and everything. So of course the hills and the valleys and all of that. But also with that, when I think of Appalachia, I think of those hills and valleys because being in areas, even just visiting areas that don't have the same geography of the Appalachian region, it makes you realize like communities and like groups of people, like you really do get to know people who live in the valley. Because when you've got these rolling hills, communities and these towns and whatever kind of crop up in the sort of the flat valley or in the holler, and you get to know the people in that holler. And that's kind of, your connection. Like if you have a class with somebody, you kind of have this weird camaraderie because you're in the same class together. It's the same thing. Like you're in the same valley together. But I also think of just like, just noisiness. I'm thinking a lot about like growing up and then kind of going off into the world. Like it was always very noisy in not only my home, but just like everywhere that I was, my friends' homes, at school, anything around me was always just noisy of people and movement and commotion and a lot of like storytelling. So like anytime you talk to people, and it's still this way with my family, anytime they call me to tell me something that's going on, it's a story. It's like a beginning, middle, end. It's got context. It has a, dramatic turning point. And so just a lot of, just a lot of movement is what comes to mind.
Speaking of the storytelling, we know that you also, apart from working in residence life, you also do write really good. I read your work, and there's a specific article that you wrote that is A Gay Appalachian Search for the Place He Belongs. What inspired you to write this work?
So my graduate program at Shepherd, like I mentioned, once I graduated from that, I was part of its alumni listserv of folks that had graduated the program. And so in about 2018, there was a message that went out over that listserv from someone who had been in the program, who was also an alum, and was on the editorial board for Boston's Pride Guide, which Boston has, like any kind of large city, has a major Pride event schedule all throughout June. And every year for Boston Pride, they come out with like pretty much a magazine of events, articles, advertisements, whatever it might be. And the call for the paper was for folks who have an Appalachian queer identity. And so I reached out and kind of threw my hat in to say that I was willing to share my story. And when I was thinking about approaching and writing it, because the prompt really was just that simple. What was your experience in Appalachia as a queer individual? And so as I started to write it, what I realized was my story is having lived in and experienced three distinctly different areas of West Virginia. West Virginia holds that unique quality of being the only state that is entirely in the Appalachian region. And so where I grew up is in the very southern part of West Virginia. Where I did my undergraduate work is in the northern panhandle. Where I did my graduate work in the eastern panhandle. So I was obviously a queer individual in all of those spaces, but I think it showed up differently. And I think that those areas approached things in very different ways. So I kind of detailed in the article, and the story I really wanted to tell was where I grew up. It was surprisingly diverse and very visibly diverse in terms of the folks who were my classmates and neighbors. And it was a lot more about class struggle. So struggling with like poverty and things like that. And you had more of sort of those visible signs or messages from people of like bias or, you know, homophobia or anything like that. Like there were more folks kind of outward about it, but it was a few folks here and there, right? Whereas then when I lived in the Northern Panhandle, there was this quiet bias. You did not have nearly as much many folks that would sort of outwardly display, you know, Confederate flags or any of these other like symbols or signals. But people didn't really want to talk about the lack of diversity or the fact that it wasn't really welcoming areas. So there was this quietness to it that was hard to address. And then when I lived in the Eastern Panhandle, it was a lot more about finding pockets of folks. So again, kind of that idea of those hills and valleys. So you'd find certain areas that were really welcoming and opening and supportive, and then you'd find areas that weren't. So it was way more kind of separated in these ways. And I think that it was really important for me to kind of reflect on what my own identities, how they played into certain levels of, you know, having to worry about those different experiences and having to sort of change the way I acted depending on which one of those regions I was in, and also reflecting on how there's identities that I hold that I'm privileged in not having to change the way that I present myself in those certain areas, and kind of that intersectionality. And I'd also say the other thing that I took away from writing that article that I found really interesting was that the individual who was also an alum, we got to talk quite a bit as I was writing this, and as they were editing my work and just kind of getting it to fit into the Pride guide, they kind of challenged me on a couple things to say, like, is it really like this in West Virginia? You know, you mentioned in here that even though this thing sucks or that thing sucks, like, you're still glad that you grew up in West Virginia and you have a resiliency and a grit, and, you know, is it really like that? And it was a good conversation, because with this person, I was able to say, like, yeah, that is my experience, and that's what I'm writing about. And how, to somebody kind of looking in, you do see the, you know, this thing sucked or that thing sucked, and then the story kind of stops. But when you're sort of in it, you live in it and grow up in it, you kind of get a choice to either stay kind of stuck in it or have some hope.
While I was reading your article, I could have really felt like what you feel and how you felt in those moments too. And especially gave me a lot of historical aspects, you know, about Appalachia and what different people, you know, can go through. So thank you so much for sharing about it and your journey and kind of transformation going from one part of Appalachia to another one, and how that reflected on your life in general and made you pursue what you are pursuing right now. So this was written in 2018. I wanted to ask you, what do you think? Do you think it is any way different, and does it welcome more the queer people? You know, is there any progress that we are making in that kind of area?
Like anything, it's kind of one of those, it depends, and yes and no. But I would say overall, over the course of many years, just our nation in general, and the spreading of access to the internet, truly, to more rural areas as well, I think is really allowing folks to get outside of their immediate bubble, which is a problem, especially for folks who kind of have grown up in a certain area and really never leave. I have, you know, the special gift, I guess, of perspective on being able to live in different areas and kind of have those different views. But I know several of my friends and family members who have genuinely like never left their, even the county that they were born in and grew up in. And that's just such a different experience because you know that the world is big, but you don't feel the world being big, or you feel the world having the same assumptions as you do, or having the same knowledge in general. And then there's this idea or this approach that they're just approaching it differently than you have, instead of thinking of it as somebody has an entirely different view on, you know, insert anything in this blank. I think our nation's getting a lot more comfortable having the conversation about different living experiences. They are kind of catching up and having that and getting outside of themselves. West Virginia as a state kind of struggles with supporting a lot of its different populations. And I think queer folks is right there in that mixture. But I think that there's also a lot of resiliency and a lot of fight in that same grit that I think everybody gets when you grow up in West Virginia, or not just in West Virginia, but in Appalachia. That grit also is baked right into folks who are queer. And so they have that same resiliency and that same fight, like I was saying, to, you know, make their experience known and kind of carve out support for themselves and their, you know, their friends and family as well. So I think that it's a slow moving thing, I guess, but it is always moving towards something positive. At least I hope it is. There are organizations in West Virginia that are doing really good work. And I think there's also organizations that are doing good work specifically for kind of intersectional identities in West Virginia, and not kind of stopping at sort of like one layer of somebody's lived experience. It's nice to see there's things like Fairness West Virginia as an organization. The Human Rights Campaign is also pretty involved, and that's nationwide, but they also have, you know, a West Virginia component to it, of course. And so all those folks just working really hard to keep things moving along.
And I think we do have to clap for those, you know, organizations that are doing really good job in the communities and to make them more progressive, you know, in Appalachia in general, and more welcoming for all of the other identities too. A lot of organizations are trying to get up and help as much as they can, and we need to really appreciate that. Speaking of that, so how is your college experience, you know, related to your experience as a gay Appalachian, or did it help you in any way, or maybe in some ways it made it even a worse experience?
Yeah, I think that my experience choosing my college really played into me kind of knowing that I was trying to develop identities that I couldn't fully in my hometown or around my family and friends and stuff. And I think my queer identity was sort of a major part of that, but also just in general, I really wanted to get outside of that bubble that I was talking about earlier. So when I was choosing colleges, I chose the furthest public college away from my hometown, like physically on a map, the farthest I could go away from my hometown and still be able to afford in-state tuition. And that's why I ended up going to West Liberty University. And I loved West Liberty University. It was so great. For a lot of people, it was their local college. So they also kind of looked at it as like high school on the hill or whatever it might be. But there was also a group of people that had come from sort of further away that really did look at it as like a little bit of a gym in the hills. And so it was a small college, and it didn't have anything I would say that particularly exciting that helped me develop my identity, but just where it was located and being able to be away from my family and be away from the people I grew up with and just kind of have this newfound independence and kind of this freedom from like assumptions or anything like that was so helpful for me and really allowed me to start to develop into my queer identity as well as, you know, so many other identities. Choosing my graduate experience had a little bit more to do with like the program itself and everything. So it wasn't just regionally based, but when I came to grad school, that also, that college experience helped me understand my own intersecting identities. So instead of kind of really living into a couple major bits of who I was, it really helped me start to spend time reflecting on all of the parts of me, and my privileged identities, as well as my, you know, identities that can serve as, you know, targets of systems of oppression or from individual bias or whatever it might be. And understanding my Appalachian identity really did start to materialize in my graduate work, because I was looking at myself kind of holistically and working with and meeting a lot more folks who were not from the region and had assumptions coming in, and understanding that my Appalachian identity was something, you know, really true to me and something I was proud of.
So how often do you still go back to your, you know, hometown, and how do you feel when visiting it?
I go visit during major holidays and all that kind of stuff. And whenever I'm able to, once in a while, for sure. Cause I do like being around my family and around some of my friends. It can be tough going back home, because it's like when you have like a younger family member, and you know, you remember them when they were a baby, and then you see them again and they're like 8 years old, or they're a teenager somehow. And it's like, you know that that's how time works, but it's also like, I remember you was like this cute little kid, and now you're kind of like, you've got zits and you know, you have a bad attitude. It feels like that sometimes, because I go away from my hometown for such long periods of time. When I go back, you know, I'll see, you know, this or that business got torn down or closed, or, you know, this big event happened in the area. Nobody happened to tell me because it wasn't that big of a deal. But when I go in and I ask like, what happened to this? What happened to that? And so it can be kind of tough to see the area, because where I grew up is definitely dwindling. Like it does not really have a lot of employment or industry in the area that's kind of making it a really thriving, healthy place to live. And so I always ask myself, was it always like that? And I just didn't realize it when I was a kid, or is it getting worse? And so I don't have the answer to that, because that's completely subjective, but it can be tough to go in and see kind of the state of things, but always love going home, because I think I live in a very, you know, beautiful area, and it's nice to just kind of go back and hang out.
When we are talking about the hometowns and where people come from, especially in Appalachia, I wanted to know, throughout your experience that you had and now throughout your life, have you met any other Appalachian who are queer that desire to stay in their challenging environments, I would say, instead of moving somewhere? Because you mentioned you wanted to go further away as you can, you know, from the area that you were, but still be in West Virginia. So do you know anybody, or did you develop any relationship with anybody like that?
Absolutely. And I know a number of folks come to mind immediately who have been on both sides of that, who want to stay in their areas and make it a better place, and also leave. Even for myself, I kind of had a challenge where I, you know, grew up here and I went to grad school here and everything. And then, like I was talking about, I went away for a couple of years. I lived in a different state. I was just over in Virginia. So I was kind of regionally still pretty close by, but then coming back to West Virginia to work, it was I knew it'd be tough, because the governments of West Virginia and Virginia, like, just have a different approach to things and different levels of support. And I knew there would be like being a public employee would come with some difficulties that I maybe didn't have when I was living in Virginia, for example. But there was still that feeling of like, you know, I'm kind of coming home. The only way it's going to improve is by having people around who are trying to push it to being improved, you know? So I kind of had that mindset, and, you know, I know any number of folks that share in that. It's tough because I think that this is one of those questions that I don't think lives entirely in the wavelength of kind of that queer identity. I think it does live in the wavelength of that Appalachian identity. And I think in Appalachia, there is that kind of warm, cozy feeling of home and community. But it can be ugly in the lived experience. And it can be really just like crappy to think about what you might sacrifice, but you could live in a, you know, a state or two away, still be in driving distance, and it's a much nicer place to live and stuff. So that's really alluring to people. It's also, you know, I think about how many kind of larger-ish or known towns and cities are in West Virginia, and almost all of them are against a border. And I think that that's telling that, you know, folks crop up or kind of build up these areas to live in that are usually right against another state, so they can kind of come and go. You know, thinking about that area, I think that plenty of folks struggle with staying and trying to make it better versus leaving and being able to be in a better area. Also to this point, I think it is important to know that, especially kind of in like gay culture and kind of queer spaces, there has, in the past couple of years, there has been a lot of media that sort of romanticizes or idealizes Appalachia. In particular, there's sort of this, I mean, this has always been the case because she's an icon, but like Dolly Parton, you know, this obsession with like Dolly Parton and any number of all these other sort of women country singers or folk singers, and this idealization of this Appalachian or kind of Southern or folksy roots to things that I think has the queer Appalachian experience in the conversation. Sometimes idealizing things can kind of gloss over the things that need to change, but hearing and seeing people like, I'm thinking of, there's a really famous drag queen named Trixie Mattel, but Trixie Mattel has also released two or three country albums written kind of from the voice of somebody who's a gay man, you know, reading, singing a country love song. There's also other like queer country artists, like I'm thinking of like Orville Peck, who's a really popular kind of shoegazy, very like a crooner kind of music. And it's awesome listening to that stuff and feeling it sound like the music that I was listening to as a kid, but having a more diverse living experience talked about in the song, or not making assumptions about things. Cause I think one of the worst things is associating Appalachian culture with sort of like bro country, which a lot of folks, you know, enjoy, and that's fine. But there's so much more to that. And so bringing out some of that bluegrass kind of strings music has been really nice to see in the past couple of years. Cause it gives you that idea that, like, speaking for myself, like it makes me feel like that experience is actually something that like is kind of cool. And people, you know, want to know more about it and want to recreate it, which is nice.
Any questions that you thought, you know, oh, he might ask me this, but I never like touched on that?
No real questions I thought you might ask me. I'm always ready to talk to folks if they want to talk through like the stereotypes, but I think that folks kind of luckily have learned like it's a lot less about that. But I do also sometimes get from people both from West Virginia and, you know, from outside of West Virginia, they'll comment on like that I don't sound like I'm from West Virginia, or that I don't have my Southern drawl. I definitely had it. There is plenty of like video of me growing up or as a kid, and man, I will watch it and just laugh at the way like I say like for the longest time I said britches instead of pants and things like that. I think that living in different areas has impacted that for me. Also, I was an English major back in the day. So when I first went to college, I had this moment where I had to be well prepared. I'm not some guy from a farm somewhere. And I really strove to lose some of that accent. And so I'm actually kind of bummed that I did, because I think my accent probably would have sounded kind of neat. But yeah, so I've kind of adopted a little bit more of a neutral thing. But I do have folks kind of mention that, or that kind of more broadly that they, when they meet me, I've had a couple of my coworkers when I lived in Virginia say, I'm not what they assumed people from West Virginia were like. And I think that that's such an important thing to really press into for folks who are thinking about any state, any region, any identity. If they kind of have those assumptions and you do make friends with somebody who has that lived experience, like, let them talk about it. Let them talk about the realities of it. Because if you don't ask questions about it, or you feel like that might be rude, you miss an opportunity to get rid of some of those stereotypes, get rid of some of those assumptions about people, and instead actually hear from somebody who is, you know, whatever, for me, you know, who is queer and Appalachian, actually hear about that experience instead of leaving things unsaid.
Well, thank you for sharing. You know, it was just a pleasure hearing you talk. Everybody, Andrew Price, thank you again today for coming, you know, and joining the talk with us.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Shepherd alumnus Amar Granulo, interviewing the Associate Director of Residence Life for Shepherd University, Andrew Price, about his Appalachian identity. Thank you all so much for listening, and until next week, I'm Bianca Eisen.
Voices from Appalachia Radio Show is sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University. With the following created to enhance and develop the cultural and economic life of West Virginia and the Appalachian region. Academic programs that include an Appalachian Studies minor, an interdisciplinary BA, BS undergraduate degree, and a graduate certificate and master's degree in Appalachian Studies at Shepherd University. Celtic Roots and Global Appalachia Study Abroad and Celtic Heritage Series. The Appalachian Heritage Writers in Residence and Writers Award, which support the West Virginia Center for the Books, One Book, One West Virginia Common Read Selection. The West Virginia Fiction Competition. The Anthology of Appalachian Writers, an annual anthology featuring writing by the Heritage Writer, and poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, essays, and photography created by Appalachian writers across the region and the world. Voices from the Misty Mountains, NEH, and West Virginia Humanities Council Teacher Institutes, Shepherd Speaks StoryCorps Project, and this radio show, in cooperation with Shepherd University Public Radio Station, WSHC-FM. To learn more about our degree programs or upcoming events, visit us at our website at shepherd.edu/appalachian or at our Facebook page, Appalachian Studies Program at Shepherd.